This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivisodi. As parents, you want your child to grow up to be confident adults with a healthy dose of self-esteem. But how do you nurture these qualities in your children, both if they're typically and non-typically developing? And how does their self-esteem affect their development from a young age up till their teenagers? On the line with me, Dr. Cindy Chan Suhui. She's a consultant developmental pediatrician from Sunway Medical Center. Welcome to the show, Dr. Cindy. How are you today?
Very good, Mira. Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. You know, Dr. Cindy, when we talk about self-esteem, we often confuse it with the word confidence. Are they two different things, and how do they relate to each other?
Yeah, most of the times, or a lot of times, confidence is closely related to self-esteem. But self-esteem, it's really how we view ourselves, isn't it? It's this image we have of ourselves, and it's how we measure our self-worth, or rather the value we place on ourselves. It gives us our sense of identity. But self-confidence is very similar. But it's more confidence that we have in particular areas of our lives, or maybe a certain set of skills that we have. Like, for example, when we perform on stage, that confidence we have, or the confidence we have as a sportsman. Or maybe, you know, some children might be very confident in an academic subject like math. And also, like my daughter says, Mommy, self-confidence is how you project yourself to other people. So a lot of times we do get confused because they are so similar, and a lot of people feel that the higher confidence you have, the higher self-esteem you will have. But really, you know, having a high self-confidence, especially in certain areas, doesn't always mean a healthy self-esteem.
I see. It doesn't mean if you have self-esteem, that will come with confidence. It doesn't mean with confidence, self-esteem exists.
Yeah. You know, self-esteem is something that's much more deeply rooted in ourselves. A person with low self-esteem, they can relive their deepest and most painful memories from early childhood when they are faced with a similar situation. And sometimes their deep pain can resurface, and this childhood experiences often shape the way we respond to these situations, even as adults. So self-esteem is something that goes much deeper than self-confidence. You can be very confident in yourself on stage, but you know, you can remain very unhappy with yourself. You don't like being you very much. And some people often find it easier to build their self-confidence than their self-esteem.
It sort of it masks the low self-esteem.
Yes, yes. And then you're on this constant chase to master more and more skills in the hope that you feel better about yourself inside.
And when and how do children actually start developing these qualities? Self-esteem, for an example.
Yeah, I think it starts from very early in childhood and even from infancy. It does develop and grow over time. You know, it depends on the environment or the life experiences that they have. It's also impacted by the successes or failures that they experience. But, you know, like things like physical and emotional trauma, even sexual trauma, family trauma can really impact on a child's self-esteem. And if the child grows up with, you know, constantly feeling powerless to change things, they have this chronic sense of loss of control, that really seeds low self-esteem and low self-confidence when they are grown up.
You know, sometimes you grow up in a pretty pleasant environment, and yet you have low self-esteem. What could have contributed to that in some situations?
I think every child, every family is different. Even if you have provided love and consistent attachment to your kids, but the things we say as parents, the things we don't allow our kids to experience on the other hand, they really stick with our kids. You know, for example, some well-meaning parents might want to push our kids to achieve perfection or mastery of certain skills or in school. And we may not allow our kids to make mistakes or to experience failure. And we end up, you know, the things we say and the way we respond to our children's failures and mistakes. Our kid might, you know, experience this constant criticism and correction, and often over expectations that are outside their control. And our children may begin to internalize these frequent reprimands. They may end up feeling that they constantly need to seek our approval by being good at something. And so, you know, despite our best intentions, our children may learn to equate their own self-acceptance with achievements rather than a true sense of their worth as an individual. So the things we say, the experiences that we allow our children, including the opportunities to fail and to learn from their mistakes, these are important. Despite our best intentions, giving them the best of everything that we can afford, these things happen. So as parents, you know, even I have to be aware of what I say, the message that I want to impart to my children. It's a learning process, but just being aware of that possibility is important for parents as a starting point.
You know, it's very difficult as Asians who have grown up in very Asian families. I'm sure we all as Malaysians understand what I actually mean. It's all about achieving. It's all about, you know, saying harsh things is fine. There's so many things that we grew up with, which to some people will say we are the people we are because of our parents and how they were difficult on us. What do you have to say to that?
Well, you know, every family is different. Every parent is different. As a couple, husband and wife, they can either complement each other or they can be total opposites of each other. So coming from an Asian background or coming from any other background, it's really working around that individual child and that and the opportunities that you are able to provide that child. Understanding that kids really absorb everything that you say to them, so that, you know, it's really important to understand that self-confidence and self-esteem in your child starts from a very young age, and you want to give children the best possible start in life. You need to understand that self-esteem for kids, it's the most important possible start in life that you can provide your child. So when children feel valued, regardless of their backgrounds, regardless of your parenting style, you know, the aim is to make our children feel valued, right? So that they are able to go on and form meaningful relationships with other people, with their friends, with their teachers. And as teenagers, they don't easily feel inferior compared to their peers. Regardless of your background and our parenting styles, we don't want our children to grow up feeling this fear of rejection, you know, being so fearful of negative feedback. I think, like, for me personally, I try to impart to my kids, you know, if things don't work out, you know, it's important to be able to accept things that don't work out and to forgive yourself, to forgive other people. So that is important. It doesn't matter which cultural background you're from. As long as parents, we understand that our children need to feel valued.
Do you think we as a society value or see the importance of self-esteem in children? I mean, based on the children that, you know, parents that you see.
That's a large part of my work, Mira.
Oh, dear.
Every day. trying to get the parents to see their child as an individual through fresh eyes, to see their child for the child's strengths, not just their vulnerabilities, and to work on reframing things for them as a family so that each child can achieve their full potential. That's my work every day.
Right. So that's a huge problem then.
Yes, it is.
Why do you think that's the case? We live in a different world. Yes, our parents brought us up a certain way. We are in touch with the world today. Why are we unable to undo how we grew up, and how do we not impose this on our children? It's not easy. Because I've been caught in that trap as well.
Me too.
But it's
join
taken,
the club.
But it's taken a lot of awareness and for you to be conscious to
yes.
not keep doing it over
yes.
and over.
Yes, yes. I think, you know, for many of us, like I said earlier, the way we respond to a certain situation as a grown-up really is quite deeply rooted in our own childhood experiences. And the way we parent our children, the way we respond to their failures may be a reflection of the way we respond to our own perceived failures as we were growing up. You know, with the best of intentions, we don't want our children to make the same mistakes we did, to make better choices. But we end up really realizing, if we take a moment to reflect, that we may be just repeating things from history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be conscious about it.
Yes.
We'll come back and find out a little bit more about boosting our kids' self-esteem. Dr. Cindy Chan Su Hui, she's a consultant developmental pediatrician on the line with me from Sunway Medical Center. Up next, I want to talk about overpraising. What does that mean now from one end of the spectrum of us as Asians being hard on our children? There's also the other aspect of overpraising and sheltering them from negative feedback or harsh comments. What happens then when we overdo the positives? That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Parenting comes with its own set of challenges, more so if you're concerned about your child's health and development. At Sunway Medical Center, you'll find a team of experts to help with both your child's general and specific health needs, as well as with developmental, learning and behavioural difficulties. For more information, visit sunwaymedical.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi on Health and Living. Dr. Cindy Chan Su Hui, she's a consultant, a developmental paediatrician, on the line with me from Sunway Medical Center. We're talking about children and their self-esteem. You spoke about how we... most of your work, Dr. Cindy, is actually dealing with children and their self-esteem. Very much goes back to parents and how we instill a sense of self-esteem in our children. Now, we've spoken about how as Asians, we're very hard on our children. However, that is not working well for children and their self-esteem. On the other end of the spectrum, you have people who are mollycoddle and overpraise and you know, that the children think they're the next best thing to sliced bread. How then do we manage a situation like that? How do you strike a balance?
That's a hard one, Mira. That is a really hard one. I think kids are really smart. They are smarter than we think. Kids can tell when praise or overpraise is not sincere, and they get a reality check very quickly when they go to school and they mix around. When we overpraise kids and they begin to internalize that, it becomes harder for them to accept mistakes. It becomes very difficult for them to bounce back and be resilient when faced with failure. And then you get a lot of behavioral problems that are on the surface. Things like, you know, if I'm not going to be good at that, I don't even want to try because I cannot stand taking the failure that comes with not being able to do that well. Or and hiding behind a mask of, say, of this overconfidence, which will... ultimately damage their self-esteem. So you have on the surface kids that are overconfident but not willing to try new things, not willing to embrace challenges for fear of failure, because eventually they will realize that, you know, they have limitations, and it's not, and what happens at home doesn't really translate to what happens in real life when they interact with their peers, or when they, you know, when they grow older and the demands at school increase socially as well as academically. So I think it can be really damaging to their self-esteem in the long term. Overpraise that's not earned, or when you praise the achievement, however small, even though they may not have worked enough for it, they did not put effort into it, or things get done for them halfway and they just come in and just put the icing on the top. these things are not well earned and not they did not work hard enough for it. So praise that is undeserved or praise that is heaped on top of the smallest things will eventually catch up with the child in terms of the child's self-esteem and the child's resilience. Yeah.
So what are crucial periods in a child's development where you feel self-esteem needs to be established? I can imagine from birth, but up to what age?
Yeah. I think it doesn't ever stop.
Oh dear.
even as adults, you know, if you still have parents and if you're going through a very challenging phase, you know, and if you've had a very secure relationship with your parents, you will want to go back to them, won't you?
Yes.
You still want to seek their validation that you're on the right track. You know, and even at that age, you know, parents will still need to hold on to jumping in and fixing things for their kids. So I think to answer your question, we need to start as early as possible, that's for sure, to give them a very secure base, very secure emotional base that they can go back to as frequently as they need and as they grow more and more independent. If you're successful at parenting, those coming back to touch base with you might become a bit more infrequent, and that's really great. That's really a testament of great parenting. You need to be very consistent and reliable with clear rules, limits, as well as consequences. Well, rules and consequences, it's not there to punish a child so much as to be road signs. You know, so you have this space for your child to navigate his or herself. You need to give them space to make mistakes and to test their boundaries, but with very clear road signs that, okay, this is your limit, and to come back to what's expected. And as they grow older, those boundaries can get wider and wider. But they still need those clear boundaries to be made known to them once they cross the line and the consequences that follow. A good way to let them develop their self-esteem from young is to give them lots of opportunities to feel useful, even at home, especially with this MCO. It's a really, really, it's a golden opportunity to catch up with that area, you know, to make kids feel that their contributions are valued at home, house chores, preparing a meal, making their beds, to accept responsibility, to contribute to the family. Encouraging them to make good choices and refining those choices if they're not so good, and allowing them to take risks, you know, reasonable risks, of course. Encourage them when they are able to take things on that are new to them. And also allowing them to feel okay when they fail. And they will, many times, you know, it's teaching them to feel okay if they fail, but also to foster this mindset that, you know, to move past your mistakes, to come back and give things another go. That's really important for young children, you know.
Let's talk about boundaries. It's a very interesting topic because a lot of parents have children hitting the teenage years, which mm-hmm. then proves to be quite challenging for some. And then try to set boundaries at that age.
In my mind,
it's a bit late, but
is
it ever too late is my question.
No, I get asked that a lot by parents who have this sense of guilt and they carry this burden with them. And the first thing I say, it's never too late. It's never too late. Yeah. It's about, yes, of course, getting a head start is good. Setting boundaries, like I said earlier, they are narrower, they're more defined, and as they grow older and they earn your trust, and you must give them feedback. It's a constant two-way feedback from not just your child, but you giving feedback to your child and taking feedback from your child as well when they are ready to stretch those boundaries a little wider, so that, you know, if you do it well, by the time they're a teenager, you know, notwithstanding their hormonal changes and all that, you kind of understand how to give and take a little bit more when it comes to boundaries and allowing your teenager to stretch their wings a little bit more, to make better choices when they make mistakes and they can self-correct. But like I said, it's never too late. It starts with having a conversation with your child, meeting them where they are at, rather than imposing what you expect from them. Might be a starting point if you think that, I kind of missed the boat. Can I catch the next train? You know, things like that. Yeah, it's about meeting them where they are at that moment and discussing with them, negotiating a contract of sorts, and bearing in mind that giving them a chance to make a choice is equally important as imposing your expectations.
We've focused very much on the parents. However, there's also the outside world, Dr. Cindy, that can have an impact on children or even teenagers and their self-esteem. And we do know now that, you know, there's peer pressure, not just in the physical world, but there's also a lot of pressure and bullying happening online. And younger and younger children are being exposed to this. So does it still come back to the parents? If you instill that early in age, that they will be able to necessarily manage themselves when it comes to the external world?
Well, as a parent, that's what you hope, isn't it? Okay. That if you do it right when they are younger and in their early twins, you know, that age when they are just going to morph into teenagers and suddenly, you know, they go into their room, into this pupae stage, you know, and they come out only for meals. If you constantly keep the channels open, even as a toddler, a child in primary school, a difficult teenager, keeping the channels open is the first step, right? It's not just the parents. It's being available when the child wants to talk to you. When a child wants to talk to you, you should drop everything you have and just listen. Giving them your attention when they really want to talk to you, that's your opportunity. Nothing else sends the message to children that they are valued, that their thoughts and feelings matter. Nothing else matters like when you are able to give them your full attention when they want to talk to you. That doesn't happen very frequently the older they get. So when it does happen, you should grab that opportunity. It's an opportunity to help them sieve through those feelings, that chaotic feelings that they might have about themselves. It's your opportunity to validate what's accurate, but also to help them reframe the negative thoughts. It's your opportunity for younger kids to model positive self-talk. You want your words as a parent to be in there before their teenage friends, the things that teenagers say must not take over what's already in there when they are younger, in their heads. It's about asking them to let feel comfortable enough with you, right? To express their thoughts and feelings that aren't always positive, you know, and you must try your best not to be judgmental when you hear things that are not so positive. But it's about letting your child feel confident to express their feelings. You can try sharing your own feelings and experiences if they allow it. Don't shield them from your own struggles. Be open about your own anxieties. But get them to focus on all the positive things that you did to overcome your struggles when you were facing this challenge, so that, you know, they feel more and more comfortable to open up to you. That kind of opportunity is really, it's very, very important. No matter how busy you are, when a child needs to talk to you, not to ask for your help, just to get you to listen to them, that's really important. For younger kids who can't really process a lot more abstract things, you might get them to make a list of strengths and things that you can ask them, what do you want to do? Teach them to make a choice. And if they are dealing with a very difficult situation for younger kids, you can try simple role-playing or visualization. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? Okay, now what's your action plan? And then help them to refine that. And as well, what's the best thing that can happen? You know, and most likely, even if something falls in between, which is often the case, they might be better able to face that situation with much less anxiety.
And if you have a non-typically developing child, Dr. Cindy, how should you do things differently?
If your child is differently able, these kids might have fewer chances to experience success like other typical kids. So as parents, we can help them reframe goals. We get them to set smaller and achievable targets for every skill set that their peer might be able to achieve. So this helps your child to achieve steadily, you know, and confidence grows from every success. It's important not to make kids that are differently able feel like they are less in any way or that they're damaged in any way. And in fact, parents need to be more proactive to provide them with a lot more experiences to diversify their opportunities. Think off the beaten track, you know, help them find things that they can shine in, they can take pride in, help them to find their passion. It can be tougher, but encourage them to take risks. Encourage them to take calculated risks and celebrate their perseverance through the challenges. This can go a very long way in fostering healthy self-esteem in children who are with special needs. Yeah.
Yeah. And parents cannot always be there, Dr. Cindy. How do you teach children and even teenagers to deal with situations where they may be feeling low levels of confidence or even self-esteem? I mean, I've been through this before, and my daughter expected me to march up to school to bring it up with the principal. But for me, that's always the last resort. I think understanding the situation first before you jump to go and, see, I think especially in private schools, you find parents knocking on the school doors all the time. And this even sometimes goes up to university, local colleges, where parents still get involved in their children's lives. I mean, where do you draw the line?
Well, I think with kids with, I mean, your daughter, Mira, sounds like she's been raised well. She's got her own opinions. So I would maybe try and get her to list down what she wants to bring up and empower her to take it to the next level so that she can voice her opinions confidently and resolve conflict confidently on her own.
Yeah.
I'm just there as a coach. But with kids with low self-esteem, they are often very hard on themselves. They blame themselves all too readily, and they lack the simple confidence to demand for conflict to be resolved. You know, they will rather shy away or hide under a stone somewhere and hope things go away. They may not even want to try. They doubt they can do things well. So these are the kids that are hardest to reach, and these are the kids that parents, teachers, maybe a caring adult that's trusted, can give them attention and to help them sort through the feelings that may be weighing them down, help them to reframe themselves. And it's all about what I mentioned earlier, about getting these hard-to-reach kids to trust you enough, to be confident enough in you to express their most painful thoughts about themselves, which, you know, may be very surprising to you, to parents who are not aware. And they try to cover it up, or they will have a shield over them, this mask. And if we don't deal with it early enough, these are the kids that are very vulnerable and end up with depression and severe anxiety, school refusal, and just generally withdraw from society. So it might help to use, if your child is low self-esteem, is really struggling with something right now, but it's not ready to talk yet, there are things that you can do, like art, bond over music, some songs, some lyrics might really speak to her, and going through, you know, what her interests are, what's on her Spotify playlist, for instance, and maybe getting that as a launching pad to start talking about her emotions in a non-threatening way, and rather than coming full on and say, "Can you tell me what's bothering you?"
Yeah.
You're not going to get any answers from that child.
There are subtleties. I mean, I've noticed.
Yeah.
I look out for posters in the room.
Yeah.
I look out for books that they're reading.
Yes.
Little pictures, you know. It is some of the signs are there, but are there more obvious ones that, you know, red flags that we should be looking out for?
The obvious ones are like the physical things, like their sleeping patterns have changed. Their meal times have changed. They might be eating less or eating excessively. They might be falling behind in submitting their schoolwork on time, things like that. Or they might be staying up late, chatting, trying to find validation from their friends a lot more. You know, I find children with anxiety, severe anxiety, even the things they wear, the colors they wear, is often a sign. They might shift to things that are a lot more somber, perhaps in an effort to shield themselves, almost like a physical shield, you know. They might spend more time alone in their rooms, or younger kids might spend more time alone or in the corner of their room, or even wanting to build a fort or hide in their tents to kind of shield themselves away from the rest of the world. So those are the kind of not so obvious signs, but there are also obvious signs like those physical symptoms that I mentioned. So it's about, I think you need to know your child very well, and no one knows your child better than you as the parent. So being aware that things like this can happen out of the blue, but there's always a rumbling stage before it hits the peak. And if you are in tune with your child, if you are able to maintain those channels open, I think you should be able to pick up those red flags, those warning signs in the rumbling stage before things really get out of hand and you feel overwhelmed and don't know where to start.
Would you have a message for us?
I think, yeah, it comes back to the very first thing that struck me when I gave a much more thought to self-esteem. Self-esteem really shapes the way we respond to situations in our life. As a child, as a teenager, we need to be able to embrace life, to live life to the fullest. We need to embrace the ups and downs, right? So if we have an unhealthy self-esteem and we have so much of baggage so deeply rooted in our subconscious mind that, you know, things that trigger us off might be very trivial, but the way we respond can be quite stereotypic and really malfunctioning, you know, maladaptive, then it's really time to think about how we want to shape our child's self-esteem from young so that they hopefully are equipped to face life in a, you know, more with a whole lot of more healthy set of methods and strategies than we have.
Sometimes yeah. It's us. We have the low self-esteem.
Yes.
And that is transferred to the child.
And yes. And so not confusing self-confidence with self-esteem is a starting point, you know. Being aware of that difference is important. Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mira, for having me.
Dr. Cindy Chan Suhui, consultant developmental pediatrician from Sunway Medical Center, speaking to us about self-esteem amongst children on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.